from the frequently infested studios of Univest at Lehigh Valley Public Media in Bethlehem, PA, it is time for another itchy episode of Chemical-Free Horticultural Hijinks, You Bet Your Garden. What's your worst outdoor pest problem? Deer flies? Ticks? Mosquitoes? If you live in the Midwest, the answer is probably chiggers. I'm Mike McGrath, and on today's show, we'll explain how sulfur can make the difference between a nice day outdoors and an intolerable itch. Plus, your fabulous phone call questions, comments, tips, tricks, suggestions, and rapidly repeated remunerations. So stay right where you are, cats and kittens, because it's all coming up faster than you dusting your socks with sulfur right after this.
J.L. Hudson Seeds has supported You Bet Your Garden and enthusiastic growers for more than 25 years. To learn more about the world's most eclectic seed company, visit jlhudsonseeds.net.
Welcome to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden. From the Univest Studios at Lehigh Valley Public Media in Bethlehem, PA, I am your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, what is your most perplexing personal parasitical pest problem? Is it deer flies? Is it horse flies? Is it ticks? Is it mosquitoes? If you're in the Midwest and/or the Great Plains, you're probably screaming the word chiggers right now. We'll talk about how you can protect yourself against these evil little mites with a substance that you can also use for multiple purposes in your garden. You won't want to miss it, and you won't unless you leave us. Please don't do that. And now, a phone call. 888-492-9444. Amanda, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Well, thank you for being had, Amanda. How are you?
I'm very good, trying to avoid the rain that we're expecting here.
Well, it is the rainy time of the year, and hopefully we'll be blessed by it later on, as opposed to seeing our cars float away. Where are you?
I'm in Allentown, Pennsylvania.
Okay. And before we proceed any further, are you in what I would consider to be Allentown, the city itself, or are you in one of the surrounding areas?
We're in one of the surrounding areas. We're in West End Allentown. So
okay.
We've got a little bit more space between us.
Oh, what is there a neighborhood anywhere in the country with a more magnificent run of houses than Allentown's West End? I love driving through there just looking at the architecture.
Oh yeah, the beautiful craftsman homes. You can't beat them. They're amazing.
Yeah. All right, what can we do you for?
So my partner and I were wondering, he's a longtime listener of the show, and he's actually the one who referred me to give you a call. We have two large portions of our yard that are overrun with bishop's weed, gout weed. One of these areas measuring approximately 12 by 5 and the other one about 40 by 8. And we're looking to reclaim the space for gardening and we want to install some raised garden beds. But our concern is that this invasive nature of bishop's weed is going to spread even more vigorously. And is there a way to effectively eradicate the bishop's weed so that we can hopefully use these in the future for vegetable gardens?
Okay, so the answer is no. The answer is no. And if you want a second opinion, that's no way. You have named. Doesn't anybody screen these calls? How are they getting through? You have named what has been considered and actually named to be the most invasive weed in America. And like many invasive weeds, this one came over from Europe and was deliberately planted as an ornamental. As you can see, the white flowers it puts on are very pretty. And it's an easy care plant. It's a no-work plant. You don't have to do anything to help it. It spreads by drop seed. It spreads by underground rhizomes like zoysia grass and running bamboo. And that's your biggest enemy. If it was just spreading by seed, yeah, you could get it under control. But if you think of the soil underneath as just giant network resembling the alien creature, it just keeps moving in all directions. Now, how long have you tolerated this plant?
So we actually believe that the previous owners planted it. We've been in the house now for 3 years, 4 years, and it's just increasingly gotten out of control.
Oh, yeah. It has no other direction to go in. You know, how's your bishop's weed this year? It's getting worse. So
yes.
But you say it is in a contained area. Now, bishop's weed favors shady areas. Are we lucky enough that it's growing in shade?
It's high sunlight.
High sunlight.
Yes, direct sunlight pretty much the entire day.
Okay, which is why you want to do a vegetable garden there.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, that's not so unusual. When I say the bishop's weed prefers shade, that means it'll grow in shady areas. But it'll grow anywhere. It doesn't care what the conditions are. Now, it is in patches, you say, that are distinct?
Yes. Yes. It's in the first small little flower garden bed that she had, which was the 12x5. And then it looks like it's spread over into another flower bed that she had that was 40x8.
Okay, so it's in what were existing flower beds?
Yes, in-ground flower beds. They're not raised.
No, I understand. Well, that's not the worst thing that can happen. Now, I'm just going to tell you the unvarnished truth. And the best way to deal with this and not to spend the rest of your life cursing this plant is with heavy equipment, is with a backhoe. In other words, you would get somebody to excavate those.
My father does excavation.
Okay, well then.
I bet he'll be excited for our call.
Then you're set. And when he is done, take all the material he has excavated, burn it 6 times, and then put it into a steel cube and drop it into the Pacific. And that way it may not come back. Are there flowers in there that you'd like to save that she did that weren't a bad idea?
There are a couple bulbs, which I planned on pulling out.
Yes, and really the time to do that is coming up soon. After the flower fades, you would give the bulb a gentle feeding and let the green growth grow until it starts to lose its color. Then you'd pull the bulbs, store them, and replant them in the fall.
Wonderful.
But as he goes into it, he will see the edges of the rhizomes. They will be incredibly visual. This is not something you can compost or do anything with. It's a total loss. But once you excavate the area, you have done the absolute right thing, even though it's a lot of work. And then you won't be spending the rest of your life going, I wish I had done this the right way to begin with, because there's no halfway measures with that. Now, one nice thing about him doing the excavation, you'll be able to see how deep the rhizomes go, so he'll know where to stop. And then, you know, it would be tricky to put in a real vegetable garden this year, you know, because you're kind of running out of time. Now, do you have another area that's not affected?
We do. And we actually already established 2 raised garden beds there as well.
So. Okay, good. So you're going to use those?
Yes. We looking at the little bit that we had learned about bishop's weed, we decided that was the best choice for this year.
Yes, absolutely. Take your time and do this well, because what I'm going to suggest is after he's done, you will purchase a load of high-quality topsoil. And the way you're going to tell it's high-quality topsoil is you're going to bring it home, you're going to put it in two containers. One container, you're just going to water. The other container, you're going to plant with some leftover seeds. If nothing pops up in the just watered container, then you don't have to worry about weed seeds coming in. If the plants that germinate in the other container look good, then you don't have any herbicide residue. So check that before you commit, you know, to, you know, filling the hole back up with yards of topsoil. But then the smart money would say, just smooth it out, let nature water it, and keep an eye on it. And then you'll see if any Bishop's weed pops up. And that stuff you can dig out by hand and get the rhizomes. And at the end of the season, it would be perfectly safe to install your raised beds, and you'll hit the ground running next year.
Okay, wonderful.
And I'm sorry that...
We are so happy that we called you.
Yeah. I mean, your other option, which a lot of University Extension websites recommend, is that you solarize the soil. But every Extension Service website I've read recently gives the wrong directions for doing that.
Interesting.
You would have a chance to do it because you have full sun, but it's almost as much work, and you do have to give up the area for a full year. And if it's cloudy and cool that summer, it wouldn't succeed. So, and I know guys, if they've got this equipment, they love to get behind the wheel and start tearing up stuff.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah. Thank you so much.
All right. Well, good luck to you, and understand that you did accidentally inherit what could be the worst invasive plant of all time. So, you know, yeah, you're facing a heavyweight contender.
Yeah, this is going to be a fun year.
Well, but it'll be productive, and hopefully 3 or 4 years from now, you'll look out at your great tomatoes and peppers and go, you know, this could have gone bad.
Hey, I'll be able to send you some photos.
All right, we love them. You take care now.
All right.
Bye-bye.
Wonderful, you too. Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind everybody who has not yet planted their tomatoes, peppers, eggplant, and other tropical treats to be cautious during this treacherous time of the season. Ignore those enticing daytime temperatures and wait until nighttime temps are solidly in the 50s. But don't go watching your weather just yet, because we'll be right back with Chiggers, Sulfur, and your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from the Univest Studios at Lehigh Valley Public Media in Bethlehem, PA.
J.L. Hudson Seeds has supported You Bet Your Garden and enthusiastic growers for more than 25 years. To learn more about the world's most eclectic seed company, visit jlhudsonseeds.net.
Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the Univest Studios at Lehigh Valley Public Media in Bethlehem, PA. I am your host. Coming up later... No, I am your host, Mike McGrath, coming up later. No, I'm here right now. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, we're going to talk about chiggers and other notorious pests of summer and the wonderful things you can do with sulfur in your garden. And they're connected. I wish I was. So stay tuned and we'll all figure it out. Willie, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hey, Mike. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being had. Willie, how you doing?
Pretty good. How are you?
I am just ducky. I miss the show being on TV because you can't see Ducky dance, but he is here with me, and he's always happy to be spoken of. All right, where is Will? I won't say you're, well, I'm going to say you're Ducky anyway. You can't stop me. Where's Willie Ducky?
I'm in Nazareth, Pennsylvania.
Okay, very good. Home of Martin Guitar.
You got it.
Recently in the news for, I believe, constructing and donating an Earth Day guitar, going back to their earliest days where they limited the use of things like whale parts and rosewood, knowing that they were endangered or were about to be endangered, or they just always did the right thing. But I saw the guitar. It's painted with a mother and juvenile humpback whale, and they are so precious to us in this neighborhood, in this area, in the Lehigh Valley. It's great to have them here.
I didn't know about the guitar. That's great.
All right. So what can we do for Willie today?
Well, a couple of years ago, I bought two dwarf apple trees that I planted in my backyard. We have about an acre here. And not knowing better at the time, I did not use the soil that I dug out of the hole to put back into the hole. So I've had them. They've been there for about 2 years, I would say now.
Mm-hmm.
And after listening to your show and, you know, discovering the mistake I made, they have grown. I'm just wondering if they're going to produce at some point or if that mistake is something I'm not going to be able to recover from.
Well, you sent us a bunch of pictures.
Yep.
And I'm happy to say that you made so many mistakes, it's hard to figure out where to start.
Okay.
Now, in your original email, you mentioned the varieties you chose were Fuji and Honeycrisp. Now, these are the two most popular supermarket apples the business today. Is that why you chose them?
No, I mean, these were two that we've had in the past and we liked. And when I bought them from a nursery online.
Mm-hmm.
When I bought them, they were two that the nursery had listed as ones that would grow in my zone.
Well, any apple tree will grow in almost any zone. That's a dodge. The issue is, are the varieties resistant to any degree to the pests and diseases that are prone to apples grown in your area? Next to peaches, apples are probably the most prone to problems. You know, you're in Pennsylvania. You probably knew that already, but I'm trying to show off. But you realize in ads on TV and in the supermarkets, Washington State apples, right? Washington State apples. Well, the reason that apples are such a popular crop in Washington State is the Rocky Mountains. All of the different pests and diseases that came into this country through the mid-Atlantic ports never got across the Rockies, so it's much easier to grow apples organically out there. So that's something for you to look forward to once you start getting real apples.
Okay.
Now, you say these are dwarf apple trees. And
correct.
You're worried about their height.
They both have like a graft. I'm not worried about the height so much. It was just one way for me to track the progress. I'm just wondering if in a reasonable or semi-reasonable time frame, if because of the putting them in to a different soil than what's in my ground, am I going to have fruit on these or is that not going to happen?
Well, that is the point now, isn't it?
For sure.
Now, I'm looking at a picture, close up of one of the trees that shows the root system. Is it me, or is the graft line hard to see?
And maybe in the picture, but the graft line on both of them, one it's a little more above ground than the other, but right. Both of them are above ground.
By how much?
The one maybe 2 to 3 inches, the other one not as much, maybe like an inch.
Okay. All right. So you're probably not going to like anything I have to say, but you knew that when you made the call, right?
I had an idea, yeah.
Yeah. So you bought these bare root. When you got them, did you soak the roots in water before planting?
I did.
Okay, good. And you say you did not use your existing soil.
Yeah, it's very rocky and flat here, so not knowing better, I didn't think it'd be a good idea.
And what did you use instead?
A mixture of topsoil and garden soil.
Topsoil can have a legal term. It rarely coordinates with that legal term. Garden soil just means you didn't buy a bag of hammers. What'd you do, get this at Home Depot or something?
You know, honestly, back then, probably.
Yeah. Those are meaningless terms, but the good news is they're probably just as bad as your existing soil. So it's not like okay. You created this wonderful, luxurious nursery for your trees.
Okay.
Now, as I look at the pictures, there is a lot of lawn surrounding the trees, and in some pictures encroaching on it, and the trees appear to be, are these arborist wood chips?
No, these are leaf mulch from last year.
Those right.
They're going to be raked away, and I'm going to put that there.
Excellent. Excellent. Now, the pictures you sent are the trees in bud. My crabapple tree is currently flowering. What are your trees doing right this minute, which I will advise our listeners is 10 days prior to when they're hearing this?
Right now, all the other trees in my yard are just finishing up flowering. And these kind of just started.
Okay.
The apple trees.
Well, you got a crapshoot here. I'm going to tell you to excavate the trees, which may or may not mean digging them up. You know, obviously it is a delicate time for the trees. We should have done this over the winter. But it sounds like your one graft is much too close to the soil line. And whichever apple that is, if that graft drops down even a tiny bit, you're not going to get a Fuji or a Honeycrisp. You're going to get some inedible apple that's used as a rootstock. So, and I can see the wood chips that are all around the trees. So what I'm going to suggest is that you scalp the lawn surrounding your little island of wood chips. And really, I want to see dirt blowing out the back of the mower. And then I want you to get down there and either by hand use a tool. Professionals would use actually an air-powered device that would blow dirt away from the trunk of the tree because you want to get the root flare up. And there's two ways to do that. One of which would be to pull the tree out of the ground and replant it higher. But if you remove a couple of inches of soil all around till you get to the root flare, and then you really go to work, then you get some friends or some equipment, and you level the area around them to support the new height as if you had done it right to begin with. Then you can apply good quality compost beginning 6 inches away from the trunk of the tree and going out as far as you want the tree to spread. Now, these are dwarf trees, so I would say 6 or 8 feet. But that's hopefully where your root system is going to grow. The whole idea of mulching is not to protect the trunk of the tree. Mulching actually destroys the trunks of trees. What you want to do is prevent the invasion of that grass, and you want to keep moisture in the soil. So I think you actually want to, I mean, if you could take that area down 3 or 4 inches and the graft would be nice and high and you would make sure you could always see it and you could see the root flare underneath the graft, then I think your odds are really good. But that's the challenge. Most people plant their trees too deeply, and especially with a grafted tree, that could foul up all your plans. So you got some work to do. But but if I were you, I would do it now. Because, I mean, even if you stress the trees a little bit, some flowers will remain. You say they've been in the ground 2 years. You know, it's reasonable to expect a decent run of apples next year. So anything you do now, you want to make sure those flowers get pollinated. But don't worry about fruit. Right now, you got to go back and fix the foundation of this house.
Okay. Is there one of those options that you recommend versus the other, or are both satisfactory?
Everything. Everything I said. Uncover the graft. Make sure nothing can reach it. Uncover the root flare. Pull as much soil away as you can. Doesn't matter if the tree seems to be in a little bit of a ditch afterwards, and then compost out to the extremes.
Okay.
All right, man?
I definitely understand what you're saying. That sounds good.
Okay. Good luck to you, sir.
All right. I appreciate it. Thanks, Mike.
Bye-bye. 888-492-9444. Dana, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you very much, Mike.
Well, thank you, Dana. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm just ducky. Thank you for asking. Where is Dana doing well?
I live in Newark, New York.
Newark, New York.
N-E-W-A-R-K. Yes, Newark.
I hate to tell you this, Dana, but Newark's in New Jersey, okay? So
The other Newark.
Now, you know, I'm going to take yet another sidestep here. I think this show is going to be nothing but sidesteps. You know, here in the greater Philadelphia, Delaware, whatever we want to call ourselves area, there is a place in Delaware called Newark.
Ah.
And they're very careful about that. They're not Newark. You can get into a bar fight in Newark. Mm-hmm. If you call them Newarkians or Newarkins or whatever. But you got your own Newark. Uh-huh. What is it? What, you know, that's three that I know of, and I'm not that smart. What is it special about Newark?
You know, I honestly have no idea. No clue.
It makes three of us. All right. Well, what can we do for Dana? And where is Newark in New York?
Well, we are in the Finger Lakes region of New York State, so kind of smack dab in between Rochester and Syracuse, New York.
Okay.
Just south of the Big Lake, Ontario, but then just a little north of the Seneca and Canandaigua Lakes. So
Finger
we're
Lakes.
Surrounded by lakes.
Finger Lakes are a beautiful area. What can we do you for?
It is. Well, a few years ago, I bought a house that had a very overgrown yard, and I've kind of cleared all that out over the years and tried to get more serious about being a good gardener. And this year I really want to plant a flower garden, but I found over the past few years, I keep on getting a powdery mildew on my zinnias. I'm trying to remember other flowers that I got them on. Maybe cosmos I got powdery mildew on. And I'm not really sure why and what I can do to avoid it, because I don't want to lose my cut flower garden this year to mildew. So I thought I'd ask for your help.
Is it possible that the area is still somewhat overgrown and the airflow is not as good as it could be?
No, honestly, it was, I cleared out, I really had the entire yard cleared out. So it's actually very open now, and I'm kind of just creating garden beds and creating areas for perennials and all different types of gardens. But the cut flower garden is actually very open, so there should be good airflow.
And full sun.
Full sun, yes.
And do you feed your garden anything?
Just compost, generally.
Generally?
Mm-hmm.
What does that mean?
Each year in the spring. So this year, I actually, in my yard right now, in my driveway, is a load of organic compost that I had delivered from a local, compost, I don't know what you would call it, but compost place. In the past, when I was starting to build up the yard, I would just get bags of either mushroom compost or garden compost from our local country store. But this year I decided to go all out, and I've got multiple yards of compost sitting out there ready to spread. So that's
excellent.
Pretty much all that I've done is I just have been adding it as an amendment to the soil as I go along.
Okay. So obviously we're not causing the problem with chemical fertilizers. The two plants you mentioned are probably the two most prone to mildew issues.
Okay.
Where are you getting your plants?
Well, we have actually a pretty good Amish or Mennonite population here in this area, and they have some very nice nurseries. So generally, I go to those areas to get my plants each year.
And are you going to start fresh again this year with those plantings?
Yes, I am.
Okay, I'm going to suggest two things. One, even though you like these people, I'm going to suggest you go someplace else and get your plants. Because if they come out of the nursery with mildew problems to begin with, you're never going to cure it.
Okay.
And,
all right. Makes sense.
You know, that's one of the things that we can do differently. Second, I want you to learn to make compost tea. And we haven't talked about this on the show for quite a while, but with the amount of compost you have, you could take a nice clean trash can, like a rolling trash can, fill up a pillowcase with your compost, let it sit in the clean water inside the trash can for 24 hours, and then use it immediately, mostly as a spray, and mostly before any symptoms show up. You know, compost that is alive has natural disease-preventing problems, and you would do this first thing in the morning, never in the evening. And then in the morning, you would kind of have this protective coating over your plants that could well prevent mildew from developing. The rest of the water, if you make a large amount, use it to water your plants. Use it all immediately because it'll go bad after 24 hours. If you, you know, depending on the size of your garden, take a couple of old gym socks, drop those full of compost into a 5-gallon bucket, and do the same thing. You will need a sprayer to apply this correctly. And make sure you get one that has a large nozzle so it doesn't get clogged as often. And when it does get clogged because you're using a natural product, don't freak out. Just have a bucket of clean water nearby. Take the nozzle off and rinse it out and go back. But by mulching with your compost at the base of the plant and spraying the plants preventively getting the plants from a new source, I'd really be interested in seeing if the problem does not reoccur.
Okay. Well, I've never heard of compost tea, so that's great.
Yeah, I know. There's so much. I mean, I've been doing this for over 25 years, and I realize, my God, this is such an important thing, and I haven't mentioned it for 12 years.
Well, I'm glad that it's helping in this situation, so thank you.
Compost tea is a great spray. to feed plants through their leaves again in the morning, but to prevent disease, prevent especially, there's nothing better.
Okay.
All right. Good luck, Dana.
Thank you so much, Mike.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and remind everybody to resist the temptation to, quote, clean up their spring bulb beds. Removing the faded flowers is fine, but if you cut off the green leaves, you won't get any flowers next spring. But don't go running outside with duct tape and super glue just yet, because we'll be right back to protect you from the intolerable itch of chiggers and take more of your tolerable phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from the Univest Studios at Lehigh Valley Public Media in Bethlehem, PA.
This is 91.3 FM, WLVR Bethlehem, WLVR.org.
Welcome back to another thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden from the Univest Studios at Lehigh Valley Public Media in Bethlehem, PA. I am your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we will get to the ways that you can protect yourself against all of your least favorite summertime pests, ticks, deer flies, mosquitoes, and if you live in the Midwest, the dreaded chigger, with a special appearance by powdered sulfur. You won't want to miss it, and you won't. Just stay with us. 888-492-9444. Ruth, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. It's a pleasure to be speaking with you.
Yeah, we'll take care of that soon enough, Ruth. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, thank you.
And
well,
where?
My grapevine isn't.
Where is Ruth doing well?
I'm doing well in Mansfield, Massachusetts.
Okay, very good. Up in New England. What can we do you for?
I'm a New Jersey transplant. Get it?
You can't get good rye bread there, can you?
I don't know. You can help me with my grapevine.
I may.
Yeah, I hope so. It's 11 years old. I planted it. It's red grapes. They're with seeds. And I think they get attacked by everything known to grapevines, the fungus, bacteria, mites or whatever, beetles. I don't know. You name it. I think it's got it.
Okay. So you personally planted this grapevine yourself in Massachusetts. Do you have any memory of the variety or where you got your planting stock?
I think it's Home Depot. Or a local one of our gardening places, but I know the variety is red and it said seedless on the tag and they are not.
Yeah, well, that sounds more like Home Depot to me. All right, what kind of a situation are they in? What's their planting situation? How do you trellis the vines? Are they out in the open? Is there anything underneath them?
All good questions. It's a beautiful grape arbor. There's just grass underneath. It's full sun all day. And the bars go across the arbor about 5 foot high, maybe 6 foot high. So I could pick them because I'm 5'3".
Right.
And they have two trunks coming from the bottom of it.
That's okay.
I've seen other pictures. Yeah, that's okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I feel like with the two trunks, it's got way so many branches that too many places for bugs and things to hide.
Well, that's part of your answer. But that can happen without two trunks. Now, but you have these, the grapevines coming out of the ground and going over an arbor.
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
That's about the best possible situation. So now we're down. Do you feed them with anything?
I think so.
You think so?
I think it's the best possible situation, how I have it planted and nothing's around it to block the sun or anything.
Right.
Do I fertilize it? I do. Okay, I do sometimes fertilize it
with
whatever you get at Home Depot.
Oh yeah. God. Okay. So if you stop that, your situation will improve greatly. Grapes are very poor feeders. I'm not sure if that's the correct terminology, but they are not heavy feeders. When the best wine grapes are grown in California and Washington State, there are often plantings underneath the trellising system that take nutrition from the soil. Grapes, like raspberries, do best when they are not artificially fed.
Oh, I just remembered what I feed it with. Miracle-Gro.
Yes. That's what I use. Yeah, the only miracle there is that your grapes are still alive. Miracle-Gro is a combination of concentrated chemical salts that were used as explosives in World War I and II. And when the wars were over, things like ammonium sulfate and ammonium nitrate and phosphorus were found to be usable as fertilizers. So instead of putting them into artillery shells to aim at the enemy, they put them in bags and sold them to farmers and then merchandised them heavily to home gardeners in the 50s. No, they are the enemy of plants. So again, if you just stop with the looking for miracles, I guarantee you will be having fewer problems. Now, do you thin your plants?
Prune them, yes.
I think we're talking about two different things. Tell me.
Oh, I don't know that.
Tell me what you do to prune them.
Well, around in February, because the vine gets huge, I shorten it way down.
Okay. Nothing wrong with that. That's not thinning. Grapes, as you probably have noticed, produce enormous numbers of leaves, grape leaves, and clusters. And the enormity of this biomass interrupts airflow, crowds the plant. So again, if you were to go to wine country, you would be astounded in July and August to see half of the grape clusters have been pulled off the vines and have just been tossed on the ground to make sure two things. First, that the vine has enough vitality to ripen what is on it. And second, to open up everything to airflow. This is the reason so many original grape cultures, so to speak, like the Romans and the Greeks, so many of the recipes are around grape leaves, because you have to take the leaves off to have a healthy crop. And if the crop puts on too many clusters of grapes, you have to remove every other cluster. It's painful, right? You feel like you're throwing things away. But once you do this, the grapes that are left behind have the energy to fully mature, to fight off disease, and to really produce a much better harvest for you. And again, the Miracle-Gro, any other chemical fertilizer, is your real enemy here. When plants are overfed with chemicals, they attract insect pests. They attract disease because they're the equivalent of 800-pound people. They have all this ridiculous amount of stuff in them, and it draws in all sorts of potential problems. So if you just stop feeding, and you might want to read up on how to thin your grape leaves especially, and then the clusters late in the season, get the timing right, and especially look up some recipes for grape leaves, because you know they're edible. And that's it. Your problem is simply cultural, so to speak. It's just they should not be fed, but they should be thinned.
Okay.
Easy peasy.
Excellent. I'm going to keep you posted.
Okay.
On my progress.
All right. We'll be waiting with bated breath, whatever that means. All right. Good luck to you, Ruth.
Thank you so much, Mike.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Once again, it is time for the question of the week, which is so multifaceted and information full that you may wish to take notes. It's up to you, but don't blame me if you can't remember. What did he say about that? We're calling this edition Sulfur. It's not just for chiggers anymore. Now, what's your most perplexing personal parasitical pest problem? For me, it's the painful chomp of a deer fly deciding to dine on me when I'm working outdoors. They target the back of your head. So if you wear a baseball cap whose backside is covered with sticky tape, you'll trap them when they land. Then you can count the number of bites you avoided when you go inside and take it off. How about the sizable chunk of meat a horsefly bite removes? To prevent this problem, saturate yourself with a botanical insect repellent whose active ingredients are herbs like lemon eucalyptus, lemon thyme, lemon balm, and catnip. These natural aromatics have been shown to be just as effective as DEET in published medical studies. That nasty buzz you hear just as a female mosquito prepares to drain your personal blood bank? Slather yourself with natural repellents as above. Treat standing water sources with BTI granules, especially early in the season. Added to water, this concentrated, naturally occurring soil-dwelling organism prevents mosquito eggs from developing into full-grown flying bloodsuckers. Use an oscillating fan to keep you cool and bite-free while dining or snoozing outdoors. And what about the terror of finding a tick on you, or even worse, in you? To prevent this, wear permethrin-treated clothing whenever you work or hike outdoors. But if you live in the Midwest, the tiny mite known as the chigger is your most fearsome foe. I quote from the Missouri Department of Conservation's website, quote, "The worst thing about Missouri summers is chiggers." In a 1993 New Yorker column by Calvin Trillin, the legendary humorist wrote, "Chiggers, the microscopic itch machines whose prevalence on the Great Plains is the real reason so many Midwesterners have chosen to move to New York. A tourist from Joplin, Missouri, who's standing on top of the Eiffel Tower and gazing down at Paris, is not contemplating the beauty of the City of Lights. He is thinking, even if they're over here, they can't get up this high." I was reminded of the perils of chigger season by a recent edition of the People's Pharmacy, a newspaper column, podcast, public radio show, and newsletter written and produced by lifelong pharmacists Joe and Teresa Graydon, who skillfully discuss the risks and benefits of prescription medications, but also have a special fondness for time-tested home remedies, like sliding a bar of soap between the sheets to prevent nighttime leg cramps. Laugh if you will, but when I visited the south of France, a store that sold handmade soaps devoted an entire wall to, quote, bedsheet soaps. Back to chiggers. Although they are arachnids like ticks and spiders, the pests that cause the most misery are larval forms that only have six legs and not eight. Not that you could actually count those legs, as the itch-causing mites are too small to be seen with the naked eye. However, you can often see the damage they leave behind in the form of little pinhead-sized welts where they once fed, and you now itch. They don't transmit disease, just intolerable itching. And unlike the other pests we just mentioned, they're not bloodsuckers. Once they latch on to you, chiggers inject an enzyme that dissolves small areas of your epidermis. And that liquid is what they feed on. Yeah, that's going to make you feel better, right? They can be found almost anywhere, but the Midwest and Great Plains are chigger central. Although insect repellents, long pants tucked into your socks, and permethrin-treated clothing can be effective at preventing their attachment, people's pharmacy followers agree that dusting your socks and shoes with sulfur powder before venturing outdoors is the time-honored remedy, especially as chiggers tend to strike down low, just like fleas. The sulfur in your socks technique is especially useful for gardeners, as powdered sulfur is a multi-use commodity. Readily available at garden centers, sulfur is used to lower soil pH, as a plant disease preventer dating back to the time of the Romans, as an insecticide. The Greek poet Homer mentioned sulfur nearly 3,000 years ago, and as a general soil amendment that can add vigor to deficient plantings when used in small amounts. Somewhat like ticks, chiggers lie in wait in damp areas of brush. They congregate in isolated islands that host an abundance of the little nasties, while nearby areas may be almost chigger-free. That explains why your cousin got bit at the picnic and you didn't. Prevention. Stay away from damp, overgrown areas, duh. Keep such areas well mowed or post warning, chigger and tick nursery signs to remind you not to actually enter your, quote, meadow. Purdue Extension diagnostic entomologist Tim Gibb once noticed that a lot of chigger bites happen when people, quote, wander off the beaten path to pick raspberries, blackberries, and wineberries, whose thickets are a favorite chigger habitat. If you do so without the benefit of chigger protection, immediately go inside and take a shower to wash off any hitchhikers. This is also a good time to check yourself for ticks. If you delay and the chiggers begin to siphon your fluids, take a warm bath with baking soda to reduce the itching. Applying cortisone cream or ointment to itchy sites should also help. We close with a limerick attributed to entomologist H.B. Hungerford. The thing called a chigger is really no bigger than the smallest end of a pin, but the bump that it raises just itches like blazes, and that's where the rub sets in. Well, that sure was some insightful information about how to keep several of nature's worst pests off your back and your head and your legs. And now, wasn't it? Luckily, you can read the details over at your leisure or your leisure at the Gardens Alive section of the Gurney's website. That's G-U-R-N-E-Y-S. Just visit the Gurney site and click on Garden Resources. Or you can just type Gurney's plus You Bet Your Garden into your favorite search engine. Yikes, my producer is threatening to steal my stash of sulfur if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 888-492-9444 or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, you're wretched refuse, teeming to our garden shore at mikemcgee@ptd.net. That's PTD, as in Peter Thomas David, .net. Once again, Mike McGee at PTD.net. Please include your location. You can even repeat that if you want. You'll find all of our updated contact information, plus audio of this show, audio and video of previous shows, a brand new link to our archive of garden answers. Yay! And links to our internationally renowned podcast. It's all at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. You Bet Your Garden is a public radio show and podcast produced and delivered to you every week from the Univest Studios at Lehigh Valley Public Media in Bethlehem, PA. Our radio show is distributed by PRX, the Public Radio Exchange. You Bet Your Garden was created by Mike McGrath. Mike McGrath was created when somebody fed a page from an old Superman comic book into a 3D printer. Our musical director is Ken Queter. Our chief content officer is Yoni Greenbaum. Our angel of the airways is Christine Dempsey. Our engineer is Tearful Charlie Sarah. Our social media director is Amanda Norfleet. Check out her fine work and keep track of our updated contact information at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. And send her pictures of your plants, plots, and pots for posting. Our peerless princess of profound production is Jasmine Griffin. Our irreplaceable audio editor is the always lovely Jonas Bowen. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and I'll be anxiously awaiting nights that stay in the 50s so that I can take my tomato plants outside to play. And then I'll see you again next week.
This here song is about these nasty little bugs called chiggers. They get on your ankles and bite you and such. And I'm gonna play it on this nasty guitar that I should have thrown away a long time ago. Leave me alone, little chiggers. Don't lay your babies on my leg. Leave me alone, little chiggers. Of this one thing, Lord, I beg. Hear me beg y'all. Hear me beg y'all. I wear my socks up to my knees. They still make a motel out of me. They come with a hot in a buggy. It's so unfair, can't you see? Can't you see y'all? Can't see y'all, can't see y'all. I wear my socks up to my knees. They still make a motel out of me. They're calling with a hide in the buggy. It's so unfair, can't you see? Can't see y'all. Can't see y'all. Can't see y'all. Uh-huh. If you ever get yourself down in the long grass, down the south, well, that's chigger territory. So what you gotta do when you get home is this. Take off all your clothes, especially them socks. And then you put them in the washing machine on a hot cycle, lobster cycle. And then when you're all naked and such, gotta put yourself in a bathtub. like on the hottest you can stand it. Lobster cycle again. You see, a hot water only thing gonna kill them chickens. Well, only thing. And then if you're really lucky, and I mean really lucky, it won't eat your life. It won't eat your life. It won't eat your life. I wear my socks up to my knees. They still make a motel out of me. They come when it's hot and muggy. It's so unfair, can't you see? Can't see y'all. Can't see y'all. Can't see y'all. Yeah, come on. My socks up to my knees. They still make a motel at me. They come when it's hot and muggy. It's so unfair, can't you see? Can't see y'all. That's about the chicken.